Please join us as we interview Sebastian, a.k.a. Pandemic 13, creator of the upcoming Neverwinter Nights 1 Persistent World Night in the City.
It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Justin here, DM from Realms of Trinity and a member of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, Rowan here from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, this is Seb, a.k.a. Pandemic 13 and creator of Night in the City.
And you're listening to the 151st episode of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, not a lot of news since our last special episode we did. I hope everybody enjoyed that episode and some of the good times we've had over the past X episodes since we've taken over the podcast. I know I was laughing my rear end off listening to the final cuts of us going through the bloopers and everything, and this episode's going to be no different. You know, we've already secured a couple new great bloopers, thanks to Rowan.
It's what I do.
It is what you do. And, you know, I want to thank everybody for listening and the feedback we got for that. It was a great time. And thanks for our special guests for coming on. It was awesome to get the guys back from the Dark Tide and the Witch King. So it was really cool. So since the last episode, we also got a lot of new creature contest material. It's great, but it's also unfortunate it's only by one person. It's the guy, Jester M.W. Lodes Mears, is the best way I can pronounce it. Please see last episode about name spellings and pronunciations. And he has provided another five models for the Neverwinter Nights 2 creature contest, and they put them out on the vault. I know that they are very cool. Some of the ones that I've seen, we're going to talk about them in a second here, but I wanted to preface it by saying that has done a great job of making it easy for implementation, especially the ghoul. I like the model the way he did it because the additional stuff that updates that he did to the ghoul actually are accessories to the model. So like if you want to throw some, like he has one of them that has like these spikes going through the ghoul, like it's already been impelled and stuff. Well, that's actually a belt model that goes, you know, option that goes on the actual model itself. It makes it very easy for implementation. You just pack it up into one of your pre-existing hack files, and you're good to go, and you just go start getting the tool set. The other ones are done all through Appearance 2DA, or just modifications of existing models in most cases, but they are different for sure, and there's definitely new textures and model changes that he had created for it too. So those will need to be put in your Appearance 2DA, which he has provided example entries for each individual one, so that it requires it. So definitely, it's still easy implementation to get it in, but it's going to be a little bit more if you're not familiar how to pack hack files and update your Appearance 2DA file. But getting started, actually going through them, the first one was a Shambler from Quake. This thing is really cool. It's like a monster. It's all like a, I don't know, almost like a Yeti type looking monster. It's really cool. Very scary looking. I think it goes good for, like, if you got some Arctic wilderness or something like that, you just want some kind of crazy, you know, hangletooth creature coming out of the corner to romp your favorite PCs. It's definitely really cool and very unique.
Yeah, the second one is the ghoul accessories that you mentioned before, and those are pretty neat. It looks like three different options that you can add on to the ghouls, like the spikes that are shoved through his chest or a cage on his head. Things like that. And then the third one is called the Undead Lord, and he's kind of odd looking monster, but he has like a skull head with glowing eyes, pretty wicked looking, for undead stuff. So check that one out there also.
The next one is the new Lich model, which, it basically is a lich with sort of a more animalistic, demonic, skull-based head and a little book that he carries with him. It's really awesome looking, and I would say we'll rate anywhere where you need some sort of horrifying looking sorcerer. I see tons of DM event options that you could use this guy for. And the other one is the Undead Butcher, which basically it looks like he's either missing his head or he has a bag on it, and his hands have been replaced with axes. So very yes. good if you want sort of a hellish dungeon basis. That would be an excellent character to use in there.
Yeah, everybody loves a good butcher. You know, you got to have a just call a creature a butcher. And just slap exactly. him somewhere, and then some PC rounds the corner, and here comes this ridiculous thing coming around the corner with axe hands, and the bag over his head really puts the icing on the cake, if you ask me.
And hey, if you want to go whimsical, he could be the chef in a area.
That would be interesting, but yeah.
Okay, let me rephrase that. If you have my sense of humor, you'd make him a chef.
He's the NPC in the kitchen.
Exactly.
We here at the Neverwinter Nights podcast do not endorse or condone the misuse of this custom content by making an undead butcher your chef. So, anyhow, I want to, you know, definitely really exciting to get all these new models into the Neverwinter Nights 2 engine. It's really cool to see this stuff being done, and I'm really glad that and thankful that we'll Jester for short. Jester, that you've created these great models, and you know, they've all been voted up on the vault. You know, I hope that they get some really good traction. And it's safe to say that you're in the front running for the winning contest. So, being that you're pretty much the only person that submitted anything, so
I think there was one other last time.
Yeah, there was one other Neverwinter Nights 2 model that was put in, but it wasn't specifically tied to this contest, but we're going to enter it in just because it did come through the time frame. It might just forgot to put it in there, you know, but regardless, you know, there is two, but right now old Jester here has got about 30 entries to the one, so it's like playing the Powerball, you know, you put four tickets in, you have a little higher chance of winning.
So any other news tonight?
Yeah, actually, we have a little update for Realms of Trinity. Last week we rolled out the last chapter of Realms of Trinity 2, which closes our second campaign and final campaign that we're doing at this moment. There's a trailer video on the YouTube and on our website, and there is the campaign closing trailer, which we had discussed in the last episode. It contains many a spoiler, so I won't necessarily... go out of your way to watch that unless you've actually finished playing the game and you want to see what happens after what you see in-game take place. And finally, in an upcoming episode, we are going to dedicate the whole episode to talking about the Realms of Trinity 3, which is the final campaign, if we do it, for the Realms of Trinity saga, so if you will, trilogy. And it's going to be a very interesting episode, and we're talking about the whole thing, the way we're playing. So basically, we're starting from ground level. I mean, yeah, we're going to take all our architecture stuff that we did for Realms of Trinity 1 and 2 and all of our custom content, of course, but the game will be starting back at level 1. Your characters will be hold separate instance of the server, and it's going to be a much lower level campaign. At the highest, you're going to top out around level 15. So we have a lot of... It's going to be very low magic in most ways. I mean, yeah, you're going to get some nice little trinkets, but nonetheless, it's going to be staying a low level campaign. Very reminiscent of the Baldur's Gate, the original game Baldur's Gate, and that level of gameplay. But we're going to dedicate a whole episode to that with our design and our development team that we're going to be going through with this, because we've already spent a lot of time. Rowan, you've done a lot of time with Cormyr.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and we're doing a lot of work there. It's a rather compelling story, and it's really going to be cool. And it's a little bit different in a sense from the first two campaigns, because they were much darker and much more epic in scale by the time you reach the end of them. This is going to be less epic, but you know, and less dark, but it's still very significant to the story. And it'd be really cool. So I hope everybody can listen to that podcast once we have it. It'd probably be episode 154 is what we're looking at right now. We're booked up until then, so with other custom content creators.
And don't forget, before that, we still have the other side quest with the last legendary material, too.
Ah, so. Yes. I almost forgot about it. Yeah, we have the last of the side quests for Realms of Trinity. It's open to anybody who plays the server. It's not, you know, it's not tied to any of our stories. It's a side quest. But we had posted that. It's called the Vampiric Chronicles, and it's really cool. It takes place in our ethereal Dakmor, and we put another link out there. We put another video out there on YouTube, so that people can check it out. So this little trailer, it's about a minute or so long, and it really captures the essence of what we're doing. So if you like the kind of vampire-y, black and whitish, stormy lightning, thunder, and ghouls flying around everywhere, and zombies, this is the side quest for you. So I think that's it. You guys got anything else?
Nope. I don't think so.
All right, well, let's talk to old Sebastian from the city.
Sounds good.
All right. Hey, Sebastian, thanks for coming on a Neverwinter Nights podcast to talk about your upcoming Persistent World City. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself? You can get as personal as you want. Tell us a little about your background with Dungeons & Dragons, Neverwinter Nights 1, and in the game series itself.
To be honest, I've done very little PnP stuff in the past. Got into Neverwinter in about 2005, I think. Mostly with friends at the time that lived nearby, playing one of the first Astoria servers, which is probably why I haven't got much role-playing pedigree, I have to say. A couple of years ago, I got into filming, music, kind of set design stuff, which kind of comes across in my Neverwinter building. That disgusting attention to detail that I have.
Well, I firmly believe, especially with your background, but I firmly believe when you're doing something like this, attention to detail is the deciding factor, what separates you from the crowd, basically.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's really cool. So you've actually done movie production and obviously you're doing composing, but you've done all the above, basically.
Generally, yeah. I mean, it's mostly been kind of small, independent stuff, but this year's been kind of interesting that I'm moving towards doing things that have budgets, feature-length films, one or two which are getting a cinema release next year. So everything's kind of moving a bit fast at the minute. And
oh, man, I couldn't even imagine being involved in something like that. That's got to be really cool, though. You can actually be working on a movie, actual physical movie. It's going to be coming out. That's really cool. Is it a big release, or are you allowed to say what title it is? Or
can't say what the title is.
Okay.
But I can say it's got a few well-known British actors in, namely ones that have been in Doctor Who recently.
Oh, okay.
And it's a horror film, and it's partly... Oh, no, I can't say that, actually. but I'm doing music for the first time. I'm not doing music and sound design together, which is a bit... I'm a bit of a fish out of water there, but I'm going to find my feet with it and, power through it. Because, it's the first thing I've done that's got some real money behind it, and I really can't afford to balls it up.
No. I understand that. Well, and one thing, being that you're doing a Persistent World, that obviously there's a huge difference between a day job and working on a Persistent World. I mean, you're doing these out of just community work, because you're not going to get nothing for it. I mean, over the long run, you're not going to make anything off of it. Unless you're really pushing something, but I mean, it definitely is a difference. But yeah, that's really cool, and I'm sure that it's going to be your Persistent World is really going to show your skills through that, because there is a lot of that that goes into creating a Persistent World. Time and time again, we interview people. I mean, we just interviewed Travis Richards and Tom Logue from Dark Tide and Neverending Nights. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? It's just, you see how much they put into that stuff for just that.
The same thing I'm doing, big props to those guys, is that they're really going into, presenting it as a package that is aesthetically pleasing, pleasing on the ear. And it's not just kind of an empty tile set with some trees plunked in it,
Yeah, totally.
So what got you interested in creating a Neverwinter Nights Persistent World? What was the overall vision you had when you started?
Well, I think it's for the past 3 years or so, I've kind of done, I took up the reins of the Astoria modules when pretty much everyone else had given up on it. And it was always kind of a tug of war between going with a safe bet in an established universe and getting the player base and kind of doing something that was totally original. And the modules kind of suffered due to that, and eventually the players left after about 6 to 8 months. And this time we've kind of just decided, me and the remaining staff have decided that we wanted to do something completely original, and just kind of go all out on it and do the best we can, really.
Oh, that's cool.
So can you tell us the background story of City and what is needed to get started playing? And have you guys even gone live yet?
We haven't gone live yet. at present, where I think we're about 90 to 95% finished. And what we're actually looking for at the minute is our scripter has completely AWOL. And that was the last thing that we wanted to kind of get in, was those kind of final scripts to give it that little bit of personality. And he's just disappeared completely. I can't get in touch with him at all. So that's really the thing that's holding it back. I don't want to finish my part of it off until we have those scripts down. Because as you can imagine, there's so much work that goes into a module like this.
Oh, right.
You'll have to tell us.
So what about that background story?
I'm going to have to be really careful, because the whole background is something that players are supposed to kind of discover from themselves. But I'll tell you essentially what the vibe of the whole thing is. It's kind of set in an Edwardian Victorian England kind of setting, with a lot of the stylistics of 20s, 30s, 40s American film noir, which is kind of like your Humphrey Bogart kind of stuff, Casablanca, things like that. The dark streets, the lantern lights, the cigarettes, all that stuff.
Sweet.
The sexy side of things. And it's set in a, from the offset, what feels like a very artificial environment. It's a city that has its own kind of microcosm. You know, there's political entities within inside it. There's different factions. There's, you know, it's got its own economy, that sort of thing. It's made to feel like there is an outside world, but it's never kind of, you know, accessed or engaged. And the players, I think, will notice it very quickly through sound, level design, the stories, you know, the whole claustrophobic feel of it, that it is an artificial environment that's been created for them to exist in. And it kind of, this sounds really pretentious, but it plays on the idea of a PW being a walled-off game world, the illusion of it being bigger. That sounds really arty and pretentious, but do you get what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's very original, too.
And there's something sinister about it, which kind of ties into the huge overarching plot, and everything will kind of tie into that. And I understand that that probably isn't for everyone, but I've kind of brought on a couple of extra new DMs who are more traditional, in a sense, that can cater to, you know, a majority crowd. And in a sense, we're trying to get as many players as possible whilst doing something original.
I think that just from going over our previous Neverwinter Nights 1 Persistent World interviews that we've done, I will say this. I mean, you're looking at how many Persistent Worlds exist currently for Neverwinter Nights 1. A lot of them fall through with the same level of, you know, type of gameplay. I mean, yeah, they're different, obviously, and they're distinct. But what separates them out and what really brings a lot of attention is the differences, like the unicity. Like, for instance, like what you're talking about, I really like what it sounds like. I mean, that, to me, that sounds like something, hey, you know, that's really cool. I like that kind of a look and feel to something that's different and that you really spend the time and detail to do. I think that that's definitely the way to go.
One of the major things that we did from the offset was we laid out the very strict guideline that this wouldn't be designed kind of based on the backbone of what had been done before in Neverwinter. It would be, you know, we'd be looking at the source material, the films, the period dramas, and we'd be looking at other games that were coming out now, and we'd be basing level design, aesthetics, and story off those in an attempt to just kind of, you know, push Neverwinter forward that little bit more and get it out of... You guys must have noticed that it's starting to stagnate a bit. There's loads of empty servers on there that haven't been updated that are just crying out for some sort of life to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I really like that. That's really cool. All right, how would you classify your type of persistent world? I mean, are you trying to do an RP base or action-based adventure? And what's like your target magic level, low, medium, or high?
I'd say that it's kind of, it's emphasized on the role play. Specifically, you know, the city itself is a character, and it needs to, you know, the whole surface level of the city is kind of just one big non-hostile playground. And to find the hostile areas, you need to, you know, seriously go looking for them. You need to dig down and go underground. So the real emphasis is on kind of character interaction. Character interaction with NPCs is absolutely vital. Because the whole thing is kind of pitched as a detective story. You know, with those film noir elements, we really wanted to bring that into life with NPCs and the whole story of it. But I will say definitely that it is kind of low magic. We've made a bit of a risky choice in that instead of kind of just looting to get better equipment, the idea is that you loot for scrap and resources, and you trade those into specific vendors, and you get coins and other things to trade with to then buy specific items from specific vendors. And then that kind of keeps all items and equipment on a similar level throughout the player base. And we're hoping that this will keep importance emphasized on character building, class choices, you know, skill sets, that sort of thing.
If you try to start out, I think, with going to a high, I think it's the right choice, actually, because if you start on the medium to high kick before you even get off the ground, you're going to run out of headroom, and things will just be a bash fest everywhere. So definitely a good idea.
And it's quite a low-level server as well. We're still going to do some tests to define what the actual level cap is, but we're thinking between 10 and 12, depending on how to make it fairest for, you know, casting classes and fighter classes and all that.
Yeah, that's a lot of trial and error. One of the hardest things, and it's easy to overlook when you're creating a persistent world, but one of the harder things to do is to balance that kind of stuff out and try to figure out where your cap is, especially while you're still developing content.
Yeah.
you pretty much got to see the big picture, and then actually a lot of play testing.
Mm.
Okay, so tell us a bit about the DMs you have on staff.
Okay, there's 4, including myself, which have kind of, you know, some of them are from previous Astoria modules that are kind of stuck behind, and one of them is just coming over from another server. I don't know if I can say the server name because he might get in trouble from his admin, but, you know. the one coming over from Astoria, username is Irishman, something like that. He is Irish, I think. There's many jokes about that. But he's coming over. He's got kind of the same mindset as me. He's seen most of the films that we got aesthetics and ideas from, and generally he's a good storyteller. So that's something that I wanted to, you know, keep consistent throughout.
No, that's pretty cool.
Hmm.
So are you happy with the 4, or are you considering expanding into having more DMs? Or
we'll definitely be expanding. The scripter that I want to get on board full-time will obviously be full-time DM as well, and builder if he wishes. And I'm hoping to kind of scour the BioWare social site, which is surprisingly quite unreceptive to my threads that I've been putting up. But I'm hoping altogether to get maybe 6 or 7. I think that's an easier figure to achieve once it actually goes live and, you know, the player base builds up and people think, hey, I want a DM here, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's a good number, too, that, you know, when real life happens, you know, you have some backup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, definitely.
You see PWs that I'm not going to name, obviously, because that's slander. but there's certain long-running PWs that you look down their DM list and there's like 30 people. Look at the server and you think 30 people couldn't have built this. This is a mess.
Well, maybe that's why a mess, because they had 30.
Well, yeah, that could be possibly true, but I will say this. It typically what happens is that you have one or two driving developers, basically, that made the world almost entirely, and you have a bunch of very low-end contributors that kind of, you give them credit because they'll be pissed off if you don't give them credit.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, and they end up disappearing after a while. We've had plenty of people just disappear. So,
I'm going to be quite careful with my selection of the build team. Obviously, you've seen the screenshots that City has this really distinctive style.
Oh, and, certainly.
You know, the build team are going to have to be able to, you know, keep in line with that, essentially. Because I don't know if you knew this, but City, pretty much build-wise so far, has just been me.
Whoa.
Which is a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, me and the guy from one of the new DMs I'm bringing on, Ben, we counted the areas up the other night, and there's nearly 200, which isn't much for a PW, but I realized, you know, this is time that I could have spent either having sex, doing drugs, playing guitar, you know, cool stuff.
Yeah, it's not going to get back anytime soon. Just to let you know, 200 areas out of the gate, that's a lot. That's a heck of a commitment. Definitely.
Yeah.
To say the least. Yeah, that's an atrocity of time right there.
I was surprisingly fast, though. I'm amazed at how fast I did it all.
So with doing all that yourself, what are some of the challenges that you've faced developing it?
The main challenge has been doing the areas, but ensuring that each kind of region of the server has a distinct feel. Because it's possible we're doing something that's entirely urban and is set in the dark night. There's a tendency to kind of make everything monotonous, and, you know, the players run around everything and they've seen it all. And the main challenge was to make, you know, most of the regions completely different from each other whilst using only just the C2.4. So on the screenshots, you'd have probably noticed there's, you know, the typical poor districts, the noble districts, the docks district, but also, you know, there's ones that are themed on Irish towns. There's a Chinatown in there. Obviously, it's not called that. There's sewer areas, underground areas, old subway system, There's an old village area part of the town, which can only be reached by cable car, that sort of thing. You know, just making things eccentric, weird, but at the same time, recognizable by most of the player base. I think that's probably the hardest part, yeah.
Well, actually, you bring up a question. Like, you were saying you used the CEP. Is there any other, like, custom content that you really leaned on that you'd like to call out or that really helped give you the city its unique look?
We focused mainly just using the CEP. I'm trying to think exactly what gave it, you know, the unique look within the CEP. I think, to be honest, I'm a bit of a first-person shooter developer when it comes to this, but I absolutely love crates, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
All the stuff that's been imported from Neverwinter 2, the kind of things that have this preset lighting on them, which is kind of dark and shadowy and grim. I think whoever imported all that is, you know, it's an absolute genius. I saw that for the first time and thought, wow, I love this guy. but aside from that, I think the only other custom content we're using is the optional music pack, which will be finally put together by myself, which is 15 original tracks and about 25 or 30 other licensed music pieces.
Yeah, I noticed that you developed and composed all your musical scores. What is your musical background, and what made you decide to go in that direction of Forge City instead of using like predefined music?
Well, obviously, you can see we've put a lot of work into making it look different, original, and what have you. And when I was kind of setting ambiences and, you know, music for the areas, I kind of thought none of this really fits. None of it kind of has that sort of Alice in Wonderland whimsical, macabre sort of, you know, shit-eating smile behind it.
Anyway. I haven't heard that phrase in such a long time.
And I think because City has such kind of a naturalistic, futilistic edge to it, it needs to be that whole package of aesthetics that really kind of, you know, improves the immersion of it, really. So I'm not scoring the entire module, because that is a hell of a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
So there are going to be between 10 and 15 original tracks, which will range from, you know, traditional classical to more atmospheric, to jazz, to swamp blues, slap acoustic guitar, pretty much anything that, you know, sets the atmos, the environment for it. And as well as that, we're creating new atmospheres, new ambiences for areas, which will probably be built into the music track just for the ease of access for the player base. So we can have those industrial noises. We can have, you know, the sound of, oh, there's airships in it, by the way. You can have the sound of airships going overhead. Yeah.
Nice.
Just to kind of tie the whole thing together, it needed an original sound to it, as well as the 25 to 30 licensed tracks that we'll be using from, you know, various games, films, whatever. But those will be things that people most likely won't recognize. They come from more obscure game titles, film titles, whatever. So you're not going to hear anything from Morrowind, Oblivion, Icewind Dale, that sort of thing. Simply, you know, it's great music, but it doesn't fit. And that's, the bottom line is that everything needs to, you know, aid this immersion.
Yeah, definitely picking the right music score for an area is certainly a huge thing. I mean, it's almost, I mean, just from our experience, I would say it's probably one of the most overlooked things that I've seen in the past is that, you know, you build this area, it looks freaking awesome, and then you got some bullshit theme on it, you know? It just doesn't go, like Mary Poppins music or something, you know?
Quick, add some pirate music, yeah!
Yeah, it just doesn't fly, so, you know...
Or you're in the hillside, we want epic drums just bellowing off the...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
all the time.
Yes,
absolutely. I mean, that's certainly what I've seen in the past, and you know, you're developing stuff, and plus too, like you said, we were talking about how you were coming up with the stuff you wanted to set the ambiance, you know, for the server in the areas and stuff. You can't do that if you're something is totally off, because it just throws all the work you put into the detail of the area out the window.
Absolutely, yeah, and of course we've obviously with my film background, we haven't kind of, you know, skimped on the music composition and the overall sound and mixing of it. We've pretty much gone to town in the same way that, you know, BioWare would make the soundtrack for one of their, you know, major releases. So, you know, we've got some professional session musicians in that I've recorded in the past, and I've kind of said, maybe I'll use your stuff in the future, I don't know. And they've kind of said, yeah, that's fine. So we have real sax players, real trumpet players doing some of the jazz stuff that's been resampled and reworked into the rest of the soundtrack. You know, some real violin players, and we've got some absolute batshit crazy instruments in there that I don't even know the names of.
Yeah, I know. I listened to what the samples that you provide, you know, you sent to me earlier in the week. Like I said before, you know, that I always say it's awesome. Check it out. This, that, and the other. But I mean, this really is awesome stuff. And, you know, and I really think you guys are fantastic in what you put together. It's just, it's sickening. I mean, it's sickening. The only word that I can come up with, because I mean, I honestly wish that, you know, we had somebody on staff like that. You know, because we basically used other people's stuff, and Travis Richards did stuff for us too. But you know, it was saved me an infinite amount of time trying to find the right scores for things. Mm. Actually, have stuff custom composed.
yeah.
To the server, you know.
And I'll just say again what I said to you earlier, Brian, which is that once the soundtrack is done and it's put on the vault for people to download and, you know, put in so they can listen to it in City, the music will be entirely for community use. You know, there's not going to be any kind of licensing on it or anything. So if people want to use it in their own mods, use it for their fan trailers, whatever, then, you know, it's free to use.
I see you just opened up Pandora's box. No, I certainly will. Certainly will be using some of the stuff for sure. As I said before, you know, we do a lot of development. You know, we put a lot of crap together that, you know, so many areas and so much themes and things. And I certainly say for sure that the theme that you're going is something that we're definitely considering doing a lot of in our next campaign. So that'd be awesome. So I thank you for the contribution.
That's fine. I also need to mention, actually, whilst we're on the whole music filmmaking thing, it's in the pipeline. It's being written at the minute, but there are going to be, they'll hopefully get done before the module comes out, 4 1-minute, you know, live action trailers that are kind of teasers for City. Because next year, the film company that I work with, we're doing an adaptation of, you know, a Stephen King novel set in the 1920s. And we're kind of thinking, okay, we need to practice with this light and this aesthetic. What can we do? And I put the idea for City forward, you know, just 4 little mini stories that kind of, you know, explain the atmosphere, explain the environment, give people the right vibe. So hopefully those are going to be done in the next 2 months. Well, months.
We'll take this brief moment here and we'll play some examples, you know, for the audience. It'll be in this podcast. So, okay, we have 2 good bloopers for this episode. That's a good one.
Thank you.
So, do you guys, are you planning on setting up regularly scanned? Wow. Talking good today. Regularly scheduled events, or is it going to be more DMs sort of have free reign, but you know, you want them on at certain times?
Generally, I think it will be more spontaneous than scheduled events. The thing I've always liked to do is just jump into NPCs and start something spontaneous off and then make notes on it for the rest of the DMs to kind of reference later so they know what's going on. But I think the best thing for the server would be, you know, to have Saturday night events. Oh, God, I can't believe it. I said I'd spend Saturday night on a video game. Saturday night, Friday night, Sunday night, whatever, yeah. You know, obviously in the correct order. That's probably the best thing for the server, as well as kind of midweek spontaneous things, more of a casual approach where you can just hop in and get involved. Mm.
Well, I know one idea that I've seen some places do is they'll actually tell you what's the probability. So they say, oh, there's an 80% chance something's going to happen in this region tonight.
It's like a weather forecast.
Yeah, exactly.
There might be an event, there might not.
Right.
Maybe, if yeah. I can be bothered.
If I finish dinner on time, yeah, there'll be an event, yeah.
Yeah, it, in those cases, certainly a hit-and-run style event's certainly better than scheduling something and then half the people don't show up, so it's... Mm.
And the key thing about it is that as well as being designed to run with, you know, NPCs being part of the environment controlled by DMs, and having the scheduled events is that people can join factions, make their own factions, and kind of be left to it in this, you know, this world that they can just, it's pre-set up with the intention of creating role play and conflict and alliances, that sort of thing. So we're hoping that people will, if there is any kind of unexpected absence, adapt to this quite easily in the environment and just, you know, have fun, get on with it, go crazy.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So throughout... make this persistent world and getting everything all set up. What would you say is your most memorable, enjoyable moment so far?
Ooh, need to think on that.
Sure.
Your time.
Yeah, it's one of those things, which one's your favorite kid sort of thing.
The first great moment was when the first time it was uploaded to a friend's server box and, you know, the CEP lighting scripts just kicked in on the heartbeat. And for the first time, I got to see City outside of the tool set lit up with these kind of rustic lanterns. Because everything's kind of, you know, the tile set is set to dark. And I mean dark, like, you know, the fog is set to 40. Without lights, you can't see anything. So to see it for the first time with those, you know, the actual ambient lighting in was pretty amazing. I thought, you know, this looks almost as good as Neverwinter 2. This is pretty impressive. I think number two was when I first took Irish, the other DM, round. You know, this was when it had been, you know, we'd only been building it for about 3 weeks. And I took it round him just to show what I'd been kind of working on to say, hey, do you think we can work on this as a PW together? And he just kind of, every new area that he went in, you know, the prefix to what he said was, oh my God, holy shit. And then he'd say something, oh my God, holy shit, the sky, dude. Oh my God, holy shit, the talking NPCs. Oh my God, holy shit, seagulls. That sort of thing. And it was just kind of really rewarding to see, you know, how much the attention to detail could create such a reaction in, you know, a player that had seen it for the first time. And I think my third favorite is when I finally actually got around to discovering that you could light individual tiles with different colors how you wanted. You know, I was kind of like on an acid trip for the first time enjoying colors. The most beautiful thing we've done with this is on various areas throughout city, there's kind of police doing, you know, the city watch investigating a crime scene, and sometimes they'll have an airship overhead which has got these I don't know what they're called exactly, but they're kind of light shafts that came with the CEP, and we've kind of made the tile set reflect the light that comes out of that, and you walk up to it and it actually looks like an airship with floodlights looking down on this crime scene. And I thought, yeah
that's sick.
Sexy as hell.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's sick thing. That's sick thing error.
I mean, how old is Neverwinter now?
It's getting close to about 10 years.
Getting close to 10 years.
Yeah.
And when I first saw that, I thought, okay, we're not up to date, but it looks 5 years old at a push. You know, we're really trying to go to town with that lighting aspect. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, the lighting and the shading stuff that was just added not too long ago was certainly a big thing for the new, you know, the original Neverwinter Nights. It certainly had added a ton of detail.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm hoping that community patches through the next couple of years, hopefully the game will last that long, will add kind of directional lighting, because I don't know about you guys, but I think when I play Doom 3, it still looks absolutely incredible, just because of, like, someone drops a torch on the floor and everything looks cool.
Oh, yeah. So, well, certainly. Well, I know that just simple fact is that when we do our stuff in Neverwinter 2, it's certainly, I mean, using the shadows and directional lighting, is it does. It really does add a ton of character.
Mm. You know, going to town on the lighting has meant as well that stealth classes don't actually need to be in hide mode to hide anymore. One of the great things was I actually managed to, when I was doing the guided tour with a few of the Astoria players, I actually managed to lose them in an area. You know, one of them was hiding behind a, you know, hiding in a corner, what you'd normally be able to see him. Where the hell's he gone?
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Because I know this. Yeah, because, I mean, you do a lot of the rogue stuff. I mean, especially in Neverwinter Nights 1, they just, like, disappear, and you're like, okay, that's kind of cool. But, you know, it's like 10 deciwatt light right over top of your head. I don't know if you're going to be able to do that. You know, but when you have shadows and stuff that you could, and lighting that you could take advantage of, that really brings the effect out, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And because you have the main city streets, but you have so many kind of spin-off alleyways that lead to other areas and things. A thief, without hiding in plain sight, can literally run around the corner and he can be gone. You know, that's the great thing about City. It has that medieval, urban, dare I say it, Assassin's Creed-style hide mechanic to it, where you can, you know, duck into a crowd or hide behind a corner and you're gone, which is what I'm hoping is one of the unique features about it. But at the same time, I don't want to get overrun with, you know, stealth classes.
Sure, I mean, but the thing is, it's not like you're giving a extra bonus because of that. I mean, it's just, it's a more of an effect for the character's ability.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. So that,
how,
yeah,
it's,
I don't
meant
see,
to be played, I think.
Well, and you also got to look at it this way, too. And I'm sure when you were designing it, I mean, in an environment like that, you're going to have a tendency where that's the kind of people that are going to be hanging around in the corners. You know, those are, they have a place to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like that you have this world that's okay. It doesn't fit. You know, some places that, you know, there's certain classes just don't fit, you know, and icing them because it doesn't make sense. Well, in this case, this is the actual opposite direction. When your whole environment set up and tailored to that type of a character, partially, you know, I mean, in part, to that type of a character. So that's really good. That's awesome, actually. There's a lot of people who like to play those types of characters.
Well, they like to play those types of characters. They like to play them mostly as kind of antagonists. And, you know, what fun is it for an antagonist or a protagonist when the playing field is completely level? I think the most enjoyable moments I've had on my DM, you know, sat in my throne on the DM client, is watching kind of a bunch of hapless clerics bumble around a forest trying to find some halfling, you know, stealther that's just hid behind a tree laughing his head off. Yeah, I think that's kind of, you know, the high point of my life.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I like it a lot. So is there anything else that you'd like to share with the audience before we close out the interview?
Okay, I'm going to be really honest. This will probably put some players off, but I think it's kind of fair to be honest. I am ginger. I have red hair. That's about it. Other than that, a beta of the City website is up. We have a forum running that can be linked from the website. I'll give you guys the link after this. You know, check it out, see what you think, give us some feedback. You know, we're still in development, you know, not far off, but we're still in development, able to make changes. Just give us your critique. We're happy to listen. That's about
it. And feel free to, you know, give us updates on our Facebook page, forums, and whatnot. And, you know, if you want to come back on the show for the new segment to give us an update on your, you know, when you're going to go live, maybe as a go live special, we'll have you on, and, you know, we can go over that.
And if there's any, go on, sorry. Go on.
No, go ahead.
If there's any guys who out there who, you know, have any more questions or are interested in joining the staff, or, you know, would like to help us finish the scripts, if you like, I'm not going to pay you, but, you know, if you want to get involved, then by all means, definitely get in touch, and yeah, we'll go from there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, definitely let us know whenever you are getting close to the go live date so we can put that out there.
Okay.
Yeah, certainly we keep track of a lot of this stuff in our new segment of the show that we do first, and, you know, we try to call out these types of things so that you know, people know, at least to help add to people who aren't necessarily paying attention to the vault, you know, because it's, you know, sometimes that vault gets a little dusty, you know, people, you know what I mean? So certainly yeah, certainly let us know, and we'll be more than happy to post it up. And even if you want to come on for a new segment, that'd be awesome.
Okay, yeah, it's been a pleasure. I'll be absolutely happy to come back.
Hell yeah. Awesome stuff, man. I want to just close out saying thanks for coming on the show, talking about your persistent world that you're working on, and it is awesome. I mean, from what I've seen of it so far, I mean, you're really putting the time and effort into it. I can't possibly see this not being a big hit, and people diving into this and really gritting into what you've created.
Thank you kindly.
Well, with that, you get the closing line.
I get the closing line? Okay.
Yeah, you do.
Get in game, mostly City. Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity. We're solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2011.